we pursue ECPR more often?
They did not have a lot of experience with this.
Less than 20% of patients survive.
It will completely shut down the emergency department.
Everybody's got to be on the same page.
Many of these centers were building the plane as they were flying it. Welcome, everyone, to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Thanks so much for joining us here on the podcast. So happy to have you. This is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, and I am super excited about another discussion here on CCPEM about a hot off-the-press article that many of you are talking about and has been the topic of conversation, well, resuscitation and critical care over the last several years, and that is the benefit of ECPR, using ECMO with respect to patients presenting with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. So we're going to dive into the latest article, the latest study that evaluates ECPR, and well, going to try to answer the question, should you look into setting up your own ECPR program? But before doing that, I cannot do this alone. I have amazing co-stars here on CCPEM, so let me welcome them in. You know them well. Dr. Peter W., Dr. John Greenwood, and Dr. Rob Rodriguez. Peter, I'm turning to you. How goes it in New Orleans?
Wonderful. Everybody's embracing the Lenten season after a pretty eventful carnival season. So everybody survived. The weather was spectacular. It makes it a little bit more of a challenge here because it was a warm carnival, which means there were far less clothes on folks. But unscathed.
Sounds great. And I just leaning back to the last podcast, you had mentioned critical points. We're coming up on that. Any additional details for that course?
No, critical points in Charleston. So we're excited about that. And at the end of March, look for it as the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. So please consider joining us at that time.
Sounds great. Well, let me head west to Dr. Rodriguez.
Yeah, we, in contrast, are bundled up. We had our first snow here in the Bay Area in a while, just yesterday and today. But things are going well, and happy to meet with all of you again.
Sounds good. Now, for those of you listening in and for have done so over the many years, obviously you can't see us on video. Rob's always tuning in, recording in his t-shirt, but I think he's wrapped up in sweatshirts and sweater out there, so it must be cold on the West Coast.
It's freezing. Too cold.
Well, no stranger to colder temperatures here in the Mid-Atlantic. Going over to Philadelphia, Dr. John Greenwood, how are you?
I'm doing great. As you're talking about conferences, I just was making some travel arrangements, looking forward to heading to New Orleans at the end of April. We have our AAEM resuscitation post-conference. I think it's the 25th and 26th. So I'm excited to head down to New Orleans and maybe we can all catch up for those who will be down there. Looking forward to it.
Likewise, John. Thanks for that reminder. I can't wait to be participating in Critical Points along with AAEM's Resus PostCon. So very much looking forward to that and would ask that you all give really serious consideration to attending both of those outstanding conferences. Well, John, I went to you last, but now I'm going back to you first because you sent us this article with respect to ECPR. Once again, hot off the press. And I'm going to turn the mic over to you to lead us through this discussion.
Absolutely. So I'm really excited to talk about this somewhat controversial trial that was just published in New England Journal of Medicine by Dr. Sovereign and his group, which basically what we're going to talk about is their randomized control trial for early extracorporeal CPR for refractory out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. And this was just published last month in New England Journal under that title. And, you know, I think all of us, as ECMO has become a little bit more popular, I think, across the country as a method to treat refractory heart failure, cardiogenic shock, and more recently in the thought of, well, can we use this for cardiac arrest? And while we all know that there are approximately 350,000 out-of-hospital cardiac arrests that occur in the United States each year, unfortunately, even with revisions to the AHA guidelines and protocols, less than 20% of patients survive. And unfortunately, with some variation, depending on where you are in the U.S., less than 7% on average have a good neurologic outcome. So there's a big interest in finding new ways to treat cardiac arrest and hopefully improve some of the poor outcomes that we've had over the past half a decade. Now, multiple observational studies have found benefit in the use of ECMO for refractory cardiac arrest. And in the past 2 years, we now have three trials that have compared the outcomes of ECPR for conventional ACLS. And so, Rob, maybe what you can do is walk us through maybe the two previous trials aside from this one, and maybe some of the data that's out there already, and then perhaps what the goal of the Inception trial was that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, thanks, John. So we had previously discussed the role of ECMO to treat out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. Most recently, we discussed that in the ARREST trial, that's ARREST trial, in which the investigators randomized 30, only 30, out-of-hospital cardiac arrest patients to a bundle of ECMO facilitated resuscitation versus standard ACLS. In terms of the primary outcome of neurointact survival, they found that the intervention group, the ECMO group, had a survival of 43% versus 7% in the control group. So obviously this was a tiny trial, it was not definitive. Again, only 30 patients. It was performed at a center that's highly experienced with ECMO, with a small number of clinicians performing the clinical trial. And notably, this trial, the ARREST trial, had a fragility index of 1, which basically means that if one patient in the intervention group had not survived, then their results would not have been significant. So turnover of one patient either way would have made their results insignificant. Another trial that we haven't discussed on CCPM was the Prague out-of-hospital cardiac arrest trial, which was a single-center randomized controlled trial. It was published in JAMA. In this much larger trial of 256 patients, in this trial, they found 31.5% survival with good neurologic outcome in the intervention group versus 22% in the control group. Much larger trial, and they did find statistical benefit in favor of ECPR at 30 days. So those are the two big trials, or the two trials that had been previously done. And in an attempt to address some of the limitations from the previous literature, this Inception trial that we're talking about today was performed and was just published in the January issue of New England Journal. And so the objectives of the Inception trial were to compare the effect of extracorporeal CPR as compared to conventional CPR on survival with favorable neurologic outcome at 30 days in patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest and an initial ventricular arrhythmia. In other words, a dysrhythmia, cardiac arrest of thought to be primary cardiac cause. We have these previous two studies, and now the Inception trial was performed to provide more data on this important topic.
That's an awesome summary, Rob. And, you know, you highlighted some really key elements of the randomized trials that are out in the literature right now. Two single center studies. Obviously, these are centers that are high volume, at least the Prague study for the ARREST trial in Minneapolis. That's the Yiannopoulos group. This is a high functioning EMS center where they do a lot of training and are prepared and have a very standardized way of taking care of their post-arrest patients. But Peter, maybe walk us through the Inception trial. And particularly what's interesting is that this was not a single center trial. This was a little bit different. So what were the methods of the paper?
Yeah. So just to go over the methods, as you mentioned, John, it's a multi-centered randomized trial that occurred from May 2017 to February 2021. The location actually included 10 centers, all of them being in the Netherlands. So the patients who was included, adults aged 18 to 70 years of age, and then a witnessed arrest, initial ventricular dysrhythmia or arrhythmia, either VTAC or VFib for these patients, a refractory cardiac arrest defined as greater than 15 minutes of advanced life support. It excluded patients with ROSC with sustained hemodynamic recovery within 15 minutes. They also excluded terminal heart failure or DNR code status. They excluded those patients with severe pulmonary disease. They wanted to focus just on cardiac. They eliminated those folks with disseminated cancer. They excluded those folks who were pregnant. They excluded bilateral femoral artery bypass surgery patients. They excluded expected arrest to cannulation time estimated to be greater than 60 minutes. So those people were excluded. And then lastly, they excluded severe volume depletion from a non-sepsis etiology or cause. Now, a little bit about the trial procedures. At the 15-minute mark of ACLS, patients were screened for inclusion versus exclusion criteria. The local hospital was notified. Patients were packaged and transported to the nearest hospital. After notification of the incoming patient, patients underwent a one-to-one permuted block randomization. EMS teams were unaware of the trial and group assignment. If the patient had ROSC prior to cannulation, they remained in the assigned group for the intention to treat analysis. Post-resuscitation care, what did that include? Targeted temperature management at all of the sites. Locally determined post-arrest care. So there was no post-arrest care standardized protocol across the 10 centers. The primary outcome was survival with favorable neurological outcome. So a CPC score of 1 or 2. The scores go from 1 to 5, with the lowest scores being the best outcome. And this was measured at 30 days. Secondary outcomes, duration of CPR before ROSC, total duration of CPR, ICU days, hospital days, the duration of mechanical ventilation, and then long-term outcomes to include 30-day survival, 6-month survival, and then 6-month neurological outcomes. And then the sample size, estimated 8% neurointact survival in ACLS group and 30% in the ECLS group. So 55 patients per group would be able to detect a difference between the two. After 70 patients, the sample size was increased to 134 patients because 6 out of 27 patients in the ECPR group did not receive the assigned procedures because of pre-cannulation ROSC. So these folks got return of spontaneous circulation before they were cannulated, so they fell out. So they had to increase the sample size as a result.
That's wonderful, Peter. Awesome job. You really pointed out some important components to this trial. And, you know, just to highlight one or two of them, certainly they were looking at primary cardiac causes for cardiac arrest. The exclusion criteria included lots of things, I think, that many centers in the U.S. include for exclusions for ECPR. This was in randomized trial with intention to treat. So, you know, this was a little bit of a pragmatic determination of like, listen, like we're going to try to keep patients in the groups they're assigned to. But obviously that comes with some potential pitfalls, which we'll get into with the results. And ultimately, the post-arrest care was locally determined, what you said, which I think is important too, means that there was no real protocol in how these patients were being managed after arrest. We can talk about this at the end, maybe some thoughts about how that might impact, obviously, the results of the trial, but certainly with variation in clinical care, you introduce the opportunity for things like survival bias, selection bias, and that sort of thing beyond just the intervention of ECMO. So ultimately, on its face, though, I think that they did a nice job deciding upon the patients they were going to treat, how they were going to operate this across these 10 centers. So having a multi-center component was definitely novel and important to determine whether or not these findings from the previous two trials were reproducible, which, if true, if it is in fact going to result in an outcomes difference, should be reproducible. So let's move to Mike. We've gone through the inclusion-exclusion criteria, the protocol, how this study was going to be done. How did they do? How did these 10 centers in their ECPR trial, what did they find?
All right. So I get to provide the take-home message, the results. And once again, getting back to that question, should we pursue ECPR more often? So in total, they enrolled 160 patients, but ultimately 26 were included. So we're looking at 134 patients here in the inception trial. When we look at eCPR versus conventional CPR, 70 patients randomized to eCPR, and ultimately 46 were successfully cannulated and started on ECMO, compared with 64 patients in the conventional CPR group. Who were these individuals? Well, in general, they were essentially male patients. So 90% of patients enrolled here were male in their middle 50s. So mean age was 54 to 57. Most patients got mechanical CPR, epinephrine, amiodarone, because as we talked about, as Rob stated with the objectives, we're looking at ventricular arrhythmia patients. So no surprise they got an antiarrhythmic. And well, we would anticipate a high lactate. These patients are presenting in cardiac arrest. So the lactate was pretty high at about 13 on admission to the emergency department for both groups. With respect to the cardiac arrest data, so now we're looking at eCPR versus conventional CPR. Transport times, pretty equal. They were fast. So from the time patients collapsed or were identified to be in arrest to EMS transport, low 20s, so 21 versus 25 minutes. Their arrest to hospital time, pretty much unchanged or equal, 36 versus 38 minutes. And then for those that were placed on ECMO, the median time from arrest to ECMO flow was a little over an hour at 74 minutes. They do point out that in 18 patients, no initiation of eCPR occurred, and they explain that as logistic failure, discontinuation of treatment, or the patients achieved a stable return of spontaneous circulation. So, maybe a little bit to talk about there with respect to limitations. But the big take-home message, primary outcome, that 30-day survival with favorable neurologic outcome was no different. No different in those that had eCPR versus conventional CPR, not statistically significant in these patient populations, and no difference in the secondary outcomes, specifically looking at 3 or 6 month survival or outcomes there. Now, just a few limitations as identified by the authors. We're going to get into a little bit of a discussion here, but as identified by the authors, well, there was a lack of standardized protocols for eCPR across these 10 different institutions. And overall, early randomization led to large numbers of patients who had ROSC before eCPR, which may have ultimately affected their ability to detect a difference or an effect with those randomized to eCPR. So, John, take-home message, no difference in their primary or secondary outcomes with a few limitations.
Wow. So Inception really poured a bucket of cold water on the idea that we should be strongly considering ECMO for our refractory out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. Now, those were the limitations noted by the authors, and those are important, but I have the opportunity to talk about this trial with three really smart people. And I know that you've probably looked at this and looked at maybe some of the nuances of this study. And certainly there has to be some other limitations in your eyes of whether the randomization or how the patients were treated, or maybe some characteristics about the centers themselves. This is a multi-center trial. So certainly we're going to introduce some differences at each institution. As we mentioned before, the single center trials, this was a core group of people that were doing their ECMO and ECMO procedures and patient care. But in the real world, right, like we want to know, can this be reproduced elsewhere and should we be doing this? So let's start with Rob. Is there anything that stuck out to you as maybe made you take pause to say, why did this trial not work when we've heard so much positive kind of momentum towards using ECMO for cardiac arrest?
Yeah, John, you alluded to two big points about this study in comparison to the other studies. The first is that this is a real-world study of other centers and how implementation of eCPR could be done at other centers. And notably, there was a lot of variation in the centers. Some of the centers were just starting their eCPR programs right during the trial. So they did not have a lot of experience with this. And so that contrasts with the other two studies, the arrest trial and the Prague trial, the Prague out-of-hospital cardiac arrest trial, in which they were, as you said, second point, single centers. And these other centers were really, really experienced with ECPR. So in the arrest trial, they found that 43% of their intervention group had survival with intact survival. Now, that's just kind of a pie in the sky type of number for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. I've never seen any trial with that level of survival, regardless of the intervention. So bottom line is I put more trust in this multi-center trial in terms of its real-world applicability across sites that would perhaps undertake this. I think that those numbers in this trial are probably more in line with what we see. In other words, they found 20% survival versus 16%. Now, finally, they found in this current inception trial is 20% versus 16% with a relatively small sample size. So, you know, it's possible that there is some benefit of ECPR that you could detect with a larger sample, a much larger sample. So I don't know that this is a nail in the coffin of ECPR, but rather a more practical, widely applicable type findings in this study.
Those are incredibly important points, Rob. And, you know, I think moving to Peter and Mike, both of you also work in hospital systems that maybe have multiple hospitals involved in taking care of cardiac arrest patients. And I'm sure as you're thinking about how ECPR works at your place or in your community, is it possible to kind of reproduce or outperform this trial and maybe do something similar to what the other single center sites were showing in terms of the effect size, if you will, of what ECMO was for cardiac arrest? Peter, maybe starting with you, were there any specific limitations you thought that hit you over the head when you were reading this? And, you know, was there any ways in which you think implementation in your community where you could have done something a little bit different to improve the outcomes if you were the site of this trial?
Yeah, John, I think that's a great question. So currently we're not doing ECPR in our institution, in our community right now. People are looking at it, but in order to look at it, particularly within a system or a system of hospitals, one of the things that I would really emphasize is standardization of the protocol and procedures. That way we're comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges, both with ECPR as well as post-cardiac arrest care. Again, if we're going to say we're going to compare across multiple institutions, everybody's got to be on the same page. From my life, my perception and how we're going to design this so that there's fewer variabilities, not more variability.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that point is critical. And noting that, you know, some of these centers who were enrolling subjects, if you look at the supplement of this, maybe only had one, two, three subjects that were enrolled at their site. And so when you're thinking about competency of like a highly complicated procedure, right, you have to be highly trained and efficient and have technical excellence to be able to perform this procedure rapidly in this circumstance. And so you can imagine across multiple centers where that can be a huge issue and maybe leading to, as you pointed out, the lack of standardization and the ability to perform equally between each institution. And move finally to Mike, I'm interested in your perspective as coming from a place that does perform a good amount of ECMO. Anything that stood out to you? And, you know, if you were doing this in Baltimore, anything you would have done differently?
Great, great questions, Sean. Awesome analysis by all three. I don't really have anything to add with respect to limitations. We've hit on the really key things. John, coming from our institution, you know that we do a reasonable amount of ECMO. And similar to Penn, we probably are just like you in a very high number of ECMO cases here on the East Coast. Now, with respect to ECPR, we do it in our emergency department at the medical center. It is not a daily, weekly occurrence, but it could be once or twice a month that we do ECPR, place patients on ECMO. And I think we've mentioned this before, it shuts down the ED. With the amount of resources it takes, the deployment of our colleagues that will cannulate, place patients on pump, get started, and then we've got to move the patient once they're on pump to the destination unit, it will completely shut down the emergency department. And we know that, we've experienced that, and we've gotten a little bit better over the years that we've done this. But with respect to broadening it out across the city, across our other sites, and also across our community network, I can't stress enough the coordination of care that needs to occur with respect to this. It is so resource intensive that you've got to really have that all lined up well ahead of even entering this trial. And I'm going to borrow something that one of our senior leadership, a phrase that you guys probably heard, but anyway, this got used frequently during COVID as we were trying to figure out what to do. I feel like many of these centers were building the plane as they were flying it with respect to getting acclimated, getting used to ECPR, ECMO, cannulation. And I think really that undoubtedly affected the results of the inception trial. So I don't think that this trial ultimately says, you know what, let's put additional cold water, as you said, on the ECPR enthusiasm. I do feel that there are select patients that do benefit from this therapy. We're continuing to learn what that right patient population is, but I still think that we will need additional information with additional studies done at centers that have multiple centers that have robust protocols, standardization, and really streamline the placement of these patients on ECPR before we close the book on whether it's truly beneficial or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think my kind of take-home points mirror a lot of what you guys have already mentioned, that ECPR isn't a cure for cardiac arrest. It's highly resource intensive, and it's a potential therapeutic for the right patient to serve as a bridge to some sort of definitive recovery. But really, experience is critical. And maybe the inception trial didn't show us the value of ECMO for cardiac arrest, but maybe it just showed us that it's not a generalizable approach, even just right now, that can be widely instituted across our communities for cardiac arrest care. So perhaps there's a better way. This is maybe one way, but maybe not the way for everyone. So with that, I'll hand it over to Mike as for any other final words.
Well, thanks so much for joining us here on this podcast. Guys, I think we've started off the year incredibly strong. We've got the CLOVERS trial, restrictive fluid with early pressors and setting of sepsis. Now we're talking about ECPR. So two big, big trials hot off the press in 2023 here as we get started. Well, for any of you having any questions, comments, concerns on this particular episode, please shoot us an email through the website and we will get any additional information on future podcasts. But we are so appreciative that you are joining us here for 2023 here on CCPM. So many listeners love interacting with all of you. And as a result, we will very much look forward to talking to you on our next podcast. Bye for now.